Friday. Today's April the 12th, and you're listening to My Farm, where we're going to take some time and look in the backyard and garden. Talk once again this week about the yellow-legged hornet, a concern that we have when it comes to our native honeybee population, a pest that has only been found in two states so far, but something we definitely want to be on the lookout for. We'll have the details on that and more after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
We're going to take some time this Friday morning as we look out in the backyard and garden, sort of pick up where we left off last week. If you recall, we were talking about the yellow-legged hornet and the impact it can have on our honeybee populations here in North America and the United States, as it's now been discovered. Now, as far as other places where this has been recorded, it was first reported actually in France in 2004, and since then it's been established in other parts of Europe. The first record of the hornet is as far north as Ireland. That was in 2021. Most interestingly, though, a molecular analysis of the gene says the entire range of those yellow-legged hornets in Europe converged actually from a single mated queen that came somewhere from China about 15 to 20 years ago. So interesting that they have the science and technology to track that. After the first reports now here in the United States in Georgia in August of 2023, the yellow-legged hornet was reported in Jasper County, South Carolina on November of 2023. So far, this species has been reported only in these two United States states, although several authors have indicated it's unlikely that yellow-legged hornet will be established in the U.S. It's more important to be vigilant as we're experiencing warmer weather patterns. Now, yellow-legged hornets feed on honeybees, as we said, as well as other insects. During the summer, they will hunt for foraging honeybee adults and invade honeybee colonies to steal the larvae. That's sort of a great population, if you will, for them to get protein. But they're a great threat then to local honeybees and native bee populations. Studies indicate that approximately 30% of honeybee hives in France are being attacked and weakened. Also, that same study showed that the yellow-legged hornet diet is composed almost 70% of honeybees and other similar species. Now, as far as reproducing and their life cycle and maybe how that applies with temperature and climate, when a fertilized queen emerges after surviving the winter, the queen feeds on sap that develops her ovaries, and she looks for a suitable nesting site in the spring. Over in Ireland, they found that 99% of the queens actually don't survive the winter, but one queen is often enough to start that population over. When temperatures start to peak in the summer and early fall, then the colony begins producing males and the next year's queen. At this time, then, workers will attack more honeybee hives, killing the adult bees to obtain the food and the higher protein content for the developing reproductive casts, if you will. Now, after mating, queens will spend the colder months overwintering in a sheltered spot, and then that cycle continues. Control methods currently used to limit the impact of these hornets include trapping, physical protection of apiaries using nets, and hornet nest destructions using chemical or even sulfur dioxide. This needs to be done by professionals, we should note. The direct nest destruction methods by insecticide or gaseous sulfur injections into the nest are efficient, but at the same time can impact the non-target beneficial insects, and there are some side effects that are negative then to the environment in that immediate area and causes respiratory problems in humans if it's not done properly, so that is something to keep in mind. The biggest problem, though, is locating these yellow-legged hornet nests early in the season before the predation of the honeybee hives. These control methods are hampered by the colonies being discreet, numerous, and often not accessible, well hidden mostly in the foliage of trees. And apart from insecticide or nest removal, some countries in Europe have used what they're calling tailored trapping of the hornet to decrease the population by using sort of sugar bait in the winter and a protein bait in the summer. But some studies have showed that trapping needs to be used more carefully, as the trapping is also an added threat to the native biodiversity. So interesting, every time we think we find a solution, we also find some challenges out there. Now, outside of Georgia, you can contact your plant regulatory officials. If you've got questions in Ohio, that would be through the Ohio Department of Agriculture. If you've got concerns, if you have what you think is a yellow-legged hornet, take a photo or collect the dead specimen, and you can then take that in or send it in to help that be identified. You can also contact Ohio State University's Entomology Department or Plant Pest Diagnostic Clinic via email. That's ppdc.osu.edu or at entomology.osu.edu. And you can send specimens or photograph fee in that way to get proper identification. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. We're going to change directions now, talk a little bit about lawn care and giving that lawn some springtime attention. With more, here's USDA's Gary Crawford.
Yes, some folks up near the Great Lakes may still be shoveling snow, but for many parts of the country,
each nest is twittering, they're all babysittering. It's spring, spring, spring.
At last. And with spring's arrival, many of us are inspired to get out in the yard and do something. And definitely,
there's always a lot of chores to be done in the spring in the lawn and the garden.
Kansas State University Extension lawn and garden expert Dennis Patton. Now, he does say that many of the things we do in the yard in the spring are actually things we probably should have done in the fall. Things like planting grass seed, most of the fertilization, and spraying for weeds. But yes, there's still a lot to do in the spring. First, we need to redo some of the raking of the leaves we did back in the fall. Winter does have a way of blowing more leaves around and into the yard and piling them up in places.
And we want to make sure that those leaves do not pile up and bury the turf grass, because it will shade and kill out the grass.
Dennis Patton says even though we may have done some of these next things he's going to talk about last fall,
in the spring is when we start thinking about, depending on the part of the country you're in, doing a little bit of fertilization to perk the grass up. It's also a time we look for some weed control activity, too, because we have a lot of spring blooming weeds like dandelions, henbit, chickweed throughout the country. And then we also need to think about preparing our lawn for the weeds of summer that will be coming later.
But really, Dennis says it would have been better to take care of the broadleaf weeds back in the fall. Why not use those sprays in the spring? Answer?
Because they drift really easily into the breeze, and they can damage non-target plants. So it affects the redbud trees, the tomatoes that got planted in the spring, grapevines. Any of the trees will see a lot of curling and puckering to the foliage because of the drift of the herbicide in the atmosphere.
So in the spring, he says it's better to do spot spraying of weeds, very targeted, and
use as little as possible. Treat on a calm day, not a windy day, to prevent the blowing in the wind. And then also large water droplets close to the soil surface, so we don't get a lot of that drift and cause damage to our non-target plant.
And finally, yes, Dennis says when you go to cut the grass the first time, fight the urge to cut it really low. He says it hurts the grass by scalping it.
The other thing is when you mow so short like that early spring, all you do is open that soil up for more sunshine. And weed seeds love nothing more than spring sunshine and warm soil to start to grow.
Yes, those weeds also love
spring, spring, spring.
Oh, yes, in Washington, where it's sort of springy, Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Thanks, Gary. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great weekend.